really one of the main drivers for my conversations is to listen to your inner voice, that if you don't take time to reflect on what it is that you want versus what society is kind of dictating you to want, you're missing out on what's going on.
This is a Cracking Creativity Podcast, episode number 38 with James Whiteman and Kristen Cruz. Welcome to the Cracking Creativity Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Chung, and I'm here to show you how creatives turn their ideas into action, create interesting projects, and build an engaged audience through shared passions. Now let's get creative. In this episode of the Cracking Creativity Podcast, I talked to James Whiteman and Kristen Cruz, who are the founders of the Rebel Advisors and the authors of The Rebel Way. They want to show students that college isn't the only path toward success. In it, they talk about how conversations can lead to more informed decisions, how research and self-reflection can put you on the right path toward success, and why there isn't just one right answer in life. Now on to the episode. Welcome to another episode of Cracking Creativity. Today I'm on Kristen Cruz and James Whiteman, the co-founders of Rebel Advisors and authors of The Rebel Way. Guys, can you explain what you do and what you're trying to accomplish in the world?
Sure, absolutely. Really what we're looking to do is create alternative paths other than college and challenge the typical college path to create more ways to success.
Yes, Kevin, in our past, James and I worked at the same university for a while, and what we noticed was a trend of a lot of creative students actually struggling, going through, you know, the traditional path of pursuing, let's say, an undergraduate or even graduate degree if they didn't take a break from school, and not really knowing where they wanted to go, because in actuality they wanted to pursue a path that wasn't fully supported by education. So we wanted to challenge that.
Cool. Can you each talk about the path you took to where you are right now?
Sure, Kristen, if you want to go first.
Sure. So in terms of starting, can I ask you to just clarify? I apologize.
So when you were growing up, mm-hmm. what did you like to do? And what did you, if you went to college, what did you do in college? And how did you end up coming together? I know you guys ended up at the same university, but how exactly did you meet and such?
Gotcha. So growing up, one of the benefits I had in my household was that I grew up with a very entrepreneurial, creative father. So my dad, Joe Cruz, was constantly talking about business and really talking about, you know, events that were happening in the world and challenging my sister and I to think differently and, you know, to really challenge the status quo. So I grew up in that sort of environment. College was something new. So I am the first generation to actually pursue and finish college, which was exciting for my family. And one of the biggest things that, you know, was stressed to me by my parents was, you know, Kristen, you have to go and pursue a degree because, you know, we want you to be successful and advance. So I actually went for my undergraduate degree, and I graduated from Central Connecticut State University with a bachelor's in psychology with a minor in business. And all I knew growing up was that I liked to solve problems and I liked to challenge what was. So, you know, I tested the waters and a lot of people's patience quite a bit. But that's pretty much where I was. I actually graduated and I took an alternative path after realizing that I didn't really, you know, want to follow the path that other people had wanted me to. I had, you know, three advisors versus one in college because I wanted multiple people's opinions. And I just found that I was very different. I found that I stood out. Unique is a great term, but it can be difficult when you're standing alone And James and I always say, you know, we're aliens on this planet. So that's how I felt. But I took some time off to work. And after, you know, researching, I found that I did want to pursue school, that I wanted to study industrial and organizational psychology, because people spend most of their time at work. And I just, you know, in terms of looking at society, I wanted to find out more about that. So I ended up going to UNH, University of New Haven, with James. We both worked at the Career Services Center. And from there, we started to say, hey, you know, what's going on here? This institution's great, but it's not a solution for everyone. And we just started having really deep conversations. And from that, we bridged a business. So that's what brought us here today.
James?
Yeah. So yeah, very similar to Kristen. I'm a person that I've become a person that challenges what a lot of people think, but I would say that when I was younger, I was really into music, and so I'd take guitar lessons and piano lessons, and I'd do music theory in high school, and not really knowing what I wanted to do next. I worked with a guidance counselor and decided that college would be the next step for me and that I'd go to the University of New Haven, and that's where I went for a bachelor's in music industry. But I knew my first semester, actually my first year, that I wasn't going into the music industry, that I plainly just enjoyed listening to music. And really, me having a creative spirit, I said, you know what, let me get the degree, because I felt that it was easy. It's easy to get a degree. You get some A's and B's. You do a bit of studying. How difficult is that? And so that's what I did. But all of my experiences I found that I really enjoyed doing was working with other students, helping them figure out what they wanted to do. And that's how I got involved in the Career Services office. And from that, that's how I began my career in higher education. But I noticed, not only while I was at the college, but the colleges that I work at now, most students, they were exactly like me. They didn't know what other options were available. And so they did the only thing that they knew they could do. They went to college. And that's what really has led me down this path, especially working with Kristen, is to create these other options for students who really aren't being served. Because if they speak to most counselors at a college or anyone else, they say, oh, no, you need the degree, or this is what's best for you because this is the major that we offer. So I don't think anyone's really looking out for the students. So that's what I try to do and what has led me to where I am today.
Can you guys remember one specific conversation that really stuck out? You each can say a different one, but I just want to hear what each of you have to say.
You want to go first, Kristen?
Sure, no problem.
Because I'm still thinking of mine.
So do you mean in terms of what we do now, a conversation, or just in general?
Before you came together and decided to create Rebel with Advisors, what was one that's like, oh, yeah, we have to do this? So something that stood out.
You know, I don't know necessarily if it was a specific conversation, but more like a multitude of conversations. I remember being in the Career Services Center, and James and I, you know, we worked on different projects and for different people, but we would touch base. And one day he just looked at me and he was like, what's going on here? And I said, I don't really know. And, you know, what it was is we had run into a number of students at all different levels, you know, whether it was an undergraduate student or a graduate student, and they were saying, you know, I don't know where to go from here, or Kristen, I don't know what to do, or I would prep people, for instance, for interviews, and they would say, you know, I'm really nervous, or I don't know if I want to do this anymore, and it was kind of sad for me, because there are a lot of students, you know, who follow a traditional path, and that's the road that they're on, and that road is okay. So what we want students to know is, if you're on that road where, you know, you're studying business or you're studying a sort of degree that's going to lead you to a job that has been defined for you, that is, you know, a well established or developed path, that's okay. You know, I went to school, James went to school, and that's fine. But if you're really a creative and you're looking to push limits or do something that's never been done before, something that's new, something that brings value, you might not find it in a university setting where, as James mentioned, it's more about, you know, taking tests and, you know, following rules and things like that. So I would say personally, it was more about a collection of stories. I do remember, honestly, just faces. I remember looks of worry, people who were just disappointed, or, you know, I had one student one time, a male, break down. He actually studied music as well. And he said, you know, at one point he goes, I did this because my parents told me to do it. They wanted me to do it. They paid for it. And I just felt, you know, really bad because it wasn't aligned with what he wanted per se. It was something that was almost prescribed for him. James?
Yeah, and I'm still thinking of mine, but I would agree that it absolutely was a culmination of these conversations, but I feel like it was mostly Kristen and I talking about life, and because all of our work involves helping others, we'd come back and, you know, we'd say, yeah, we met someone that was going through this type of thing, and they all really centered back onto going to college and what people were trying to achieve, and that they really didn't see those other options. Even I still experience those today working at a college. So many students just come in and they say, oh, I don't know what I want to do, but this is what I'm going for. And when I worked at the college in career services, so many students would come in and say these types of things. And we'd work on resumes and trying to get them geared towards a particular career, if that's what they wanted. But like Kristen said, it's really built to go into something in particular, and it's not really teaching people the skills that they need to figure out what's next for them or to create what they want. So that's why we gear this towards the entrepreneurs and the creatives and those people that really are trying to be different. So I would definitely agree. It was a multitude of conversations.
Cool. I have an interesting question that I want to ask. If you guys didn't go to college, where do you think your life would have taken you if you had pursued something other than college?
At least for me, I would say I'd probably be doing something similar, right? Some people say to follow your passion, and another say it's good to have purpose. And I would say everything that I do involves solving a problem, helping someone solve their problems, or really challenging the way that people think. I did that even when I was younger, but not to the extent that I do now. So really, I find that no matter what I do, whether it was the role that I have now, working as a director of student success or working with Rebel Advisors, everything's about really solving a problem that I think needs solving.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with James. I think we both have a lot of similarities as business partners. We love solving problems for sure. For me, though, I probably would have either gone into the family business. My dad does international export and has a number of clients around the world. I was really young and helping him with international marketing and, you know, calling people in other countries. So I might have done that. The other thing, I might have been a dancer. I used to dance a lot. I still do for fun these days, but, you know, I probably would have still done something heavily creative, whether it was in the marketing space or dance.
Cool. How do you guys show prospective clients or prospective college students who are thinking about going to college, how to make the decision?
I would say really it all starts with a conversation of what they're looking for. And some of that's going through, I want to say, the filler that other people have put in their mind. They tend to fill people's head with this worry of, oh, if you don't do this and you don't get a degree, then you won't make any money, or you won't be able to get into this career. And so that creates a lot of worry for someone, where they're making decisions specifically based on what everyone has said rather than what's really in line for them. And so it all starts, at least for me when I work with people one-on-one, with really a discovery process of what is it that they're seeking, how do they want to be fulfilled, what are the things that make them happy, and then ways that they can pursue that. And if college is in line with how that can be pursued, and especially in the way that they'd like to pursue it, the way that they work, right? Because college isn't built for everyone. Then I identify those paths with them. And really, it helps them do something that's comfortable and build the skills that they need for what they're seeking.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And just to, you know, piggyback off what James is saying, one of the things I advise people a lot of times is to identify what their motivator is. And if you need someone like an advisor, like a rebel advisor, per se, to actually help you define that, that's okay too, because we all are motivated by different things. And you really want to know what's your driver. If it's pleasing other people or pleasing your parents, that's a tough one to deal with. And that's a very real thing. But maybe it's something where, you know, you want acknowledgement, or you want fame, or maybe your driver is actually money, or, you know, just something of that sort. So, or it could be helping other people in the world. Really, one of the main drivers for my conversations is to listen to your inner voice, that if you don't take time to reflect on what it is that you want versus what society is kind of dictating you to want, you're missing out on what's going on. And, you know, we speak to a lot of people that are in even their late 20s, and they're thinking, I want to go back to school and I think it's great, or I want to be a great, you know, a wonderful person that's going to give back to society, and I want to go to school like everyone else and be part of this alumni network. And, you know, they tell us all these great things. But the truth is that if it's not in line with who you are as a person and what you want to accomplish, that's going to give you life fulfillment, you're going to eventually have, I don't want to necessarily say a breakdown, but you're going to have a moment where you take a step back and go, I've been following a certain path for a very long time, and now it's time for me to think of what I want with my life and what I want to do. And I think that's why so many people have multiple careers.
Hmm. Is there something similar between high school students who are graduating and looking at going to college versus people who are at a job that they don't like to do and want to seek something different?
So just so I can be clear, the question is there a similarity between people in high school that are graduating and those that are in a job and want something different?
Correct.
I think I just repeated exactly what you said. But I would say there are definitely similarities in the sense that people are seeking something different. The only technical difference is, one, people are pushed to find something different, but the path is usually kind of set, which would be the high school student. And then for those in a job where they're seeking something different, usually the path isn't necessarily clear. And like Kristen said, they've usually reached this point where they haven't listened to themselves and what they're really seeking. And they may be afraid to try and figure out what's next or go to another job because they might feel that they've been unhappy. Or they might be doing skills that they're perfectly satisfied with, but they might feel burnt out, or that might not be what they get their satisfaction from. So the similarity is that, yes, they're moving on to something different. They're seeking something that's in line with who they are, but there's no real system set up to help them figure out what that is. They all have to reach out to some type of external coach.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes too, Kevin, I find speaking with students that are looking to go into a university setting, there's a little bit less of a stress on them, because especially if they're a creative person, they probably are trying to find, you know, different outlets. I know a number of students who actually said, you know, my parents are helping me with college, and they actually went for their freshman year, and then they dropped out. It's a little bit different, I think, when you're not that the stress level is completely different, but when you're kind of mid-career, let's say, and you start to redefine a different path, you might have a family, you might have a lot of people depending on you, maybe an elderly parent or grandparents that you're supposed to take care of. I think the level of responsibility can cause a different element, but in reality, like James said, it's the same question you have to answer, which is, what is it that's going to be in line with you, and what are you looking for next? I think a lot of people are constantly seeking for things that will fulfill them. And so they're looking at a lot of external factors, but they're not looking inwardly. So the journey is still the same. It's just you're dealing with different, almost different packages or different lifestyles.
What kind of questions do you ask the people who are having that trouble if they don't know anything at all? Say they're like just completely confused. How do you begin to probe?
You want to start this one, Kristen?
Yeah. I was at an event recently where a student came up to me, someone who had actually completed their undergraduate degree, was going for a graduate degree at this point. And so I said, oh, that's great. You know, you're starting school. Like, can I ask you why you're pursuing your MBA? And he was like, yeah, you know, I really want to talk to you about that. I feel like it's what I should do. And that's where it kind of gives me the red flag of the whole should factor. Okay, so then it's like, well, why do you think you need it? So one of the questions I ask is, where is it stemming from? You know, in a lighthearted way, I'm careful to use different language with different people. But, you know, I might ask, oh, well, why are you pursuing this? Or, you know, well, why do you think you should pursue it? The other thing I'll ask, and James had mentioned this before, is typically around skill set. So I'll notice, especially if someone is, you know, later in their career, or they have maybe an undergraduate degree, or they're pursuing something, you know, where, and they want to take a break, I'll say, well, what skills are you working with today? Like, what can you bring in terms of value today? And you'll find that people are so talented. Like, I was speaking to someone, again, the same person I mentioned, but not too long ago, he had mentioned that, you know, he also was part of a family business. And so he had, you know, certifications and just the skill set of that. It was impeccable that businesses are actively seeking if he decides to go more into the corporate or professional setting. Or honestly, he could run his own business, which his family was running a business. And so generally it's around, what are you bringing, and why are you pursuing you know, higher education, or what's leading you to pursue it? And as you start to dig and peel back the onion, you'll realize that the person starts to either talk themselves into it, like verifying their choice, or they'll talk themselves out of it, realizing it's not the best choice.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. Whereas Kristen might be more sensitive to the way she phrases things when she works with people, I tend to be a little more rough around the edges, I would say, and kind of goes back with that solving puzzles and liking to challenge not only systems, but kind of people and the way that they think, to get them to think a little bit differently. And so oftentimes, at least for me, when I meet with students, sometimes I'll ask them, you know, the simple question of, oh, what are you doing? How'd you decide on that? And then you can get varied answers. And sometimes it's, oh, well, you know, I want to do international business. And then I really have to change the way a person thinks of, well, what's international business? I don't even know what that really means. And they'll say, when they try to answer, they don't really have an answer because it just sounded good to them. They didn't really explore it. So I try to get people to connect the dots of what's next, because sometimes people say they're going into an industry, but they've never even looked at job postings for that, or what the roles are and how much they make. So someone might go for a job and they might not even need a degree, but they're spending thousands of dollars on college because they think they need it. Other times, I might get an answer that is, oh, I'm going for this because I'm good at math. And then that leads me to other questions of, well, do you even like math? And, you know, a lot of times people say, no, but I'm really good at it. And I probably throw people off. I hope you don't mind me swearing. But you know, I'll look at a student and I'll say, well, you could be good at shoveling shit, but it doesn't mean you want to do it for the rest of your life. And if you don't like something, that's exactly what it's going to feel like. And so it's really asking those probing questions to get people to question their decisions and why they made them, and really seeing if they're, again, if they're in line with who they are and why they're pursuing that.
Yeah, I think there's a fine balance between having good skills and having good skills and wanting to use them every
yeah,
day.
Absolutely.
So once you have gotten these people to think about their path, how do you steer them towards what they actually want to do?
So for me, it all begins with, I would say, research. Not necessarily always them researching, but really seeing what's out there that's aligned, again, with their skills. Because skills are typically transferable and they can be done in many fields. So it might be finding the type of field that's right for them, or it could be them starting their own business. Like Chris had said, they have these skills, but it's how they want to use them, how they want to package them, and what they align with. I'm sure Kristen can share a little more on that as well.
Yeah, you know, it really depends on the person, to be honest with you, just like James had stated. So it might be something where, for instance, someone needs to spend time alone in a reflection period and then come back to us with kind of their next steps. You'd be surprised when people come to you, and I think James is going to laugh. Sometimes they're just expecting you to give them the answer, and the challenge is we don't always have the answer for you, because mm-hmm. many times the answer lies within. And so our goal is to kind of probe and be that accountability partner where you're actually getting the person to explore what's happening on their end, in their world, in their mind, in their soul, in order to get to the next level. So, you know, it could be as simple as, you know, what are some next steps? Research is great, as Jimmy or James mentioned, and, you know, going on an adventure is great. Reflecting on what made you happiest as a kid, doing something that energizes you. Sometimes people don't realize, but taking a step back from your everyday life, whether it's, you know, you're in school now or you're at work, it really can help you gain perspective. So it looks different for everyone. We also, you know, we're putting together a group of coaches right now, which we're going to launch our full coach lineup in March. But they're all different. Some are lifestyle coaches. Some are, you know, more about career and education. And those coaches will have specific tools, as do we, in order to kind of map out and help that person develop their path. And James, I don't know if you want to add anything about the alternative paths.
Yeah, we're also going to be having options for alternative paths where people can travel, they can explore. But I know that the reason why we're creating these and really having these services is because they're either A, not available at the colleges, or B, if students really want to go after these types of things, they cost too much. And what you'll find, especially in a college setting, if it's a creative person and they're trying to figure out what they want to do, they'll run into a few scenarios. Usually you have the academic advisor that's assigned 150 to 300 students, and they have to try and map out all their degrees and their programs, and they aren't really helping the students the way they intended to get into higher education for. Very rarely do the conversations happen of what is it that you're really trying to pursue, and most people aren't trained in it. And then at the same time, a lot of the colleges say they offer these options of coaching services success coaches on campus, and really they're trying to keep the students in there within the majors. So I don't think a lot of these institutions are looking out for the students, and I don't think students have the resources that they need. So having these coaches through us and these options to travel and explore and really see what's out there gives people the time that they need, because college will pretty much always be there. But their time to really explore and make sure that they're creating a life that's in line with who they are and what they're seeking to do, it's really the best time to do that is right before college or during it.
How do you guys see the difference between what you're doing with Rebel Advisors and what you do as counselors at a college?
You want to do this one first, Kristen?
Sure. I think with Rebel Advisors, we're just a little bit more unconventional, and I mean a lot more. So I'm downplaying us a little, but no, in all honesty, we have really candid conversations and we get invested with individuals. When we coach someone, it's not only about asking the tough questions, but we get invested with individuals as individuals, and we're more tailored to the creative person than the non-creative person. A lot of times with universities, again, just as James said, they're looking to have these students remain in the university setting. They want to make sure that there's an essence of control that's present so that each individual student stays on track with what has been done. And, you know, we even have this liner in our book that, you know, in the preface portion where we say, yeah, that's boring, you know, see you later. We're not saying that that lifestyle is boring or the choice to be a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer, or I'm sorry, you know, another traditional path is boring. What we're saying is it's already been done and it's already set. What we want to do is talk to the people where they have something new that they want to do. It's new. It's exciting. It's challenging. They don't know where to start. We want to work with those types of people. So I think it's really about who we work with and the fact that we are comfortable getting involved and we're comfortable pushing the bar and, you know, again, making sure that we're supportive, but at the same token, we're letting everybody know that you are in charge of your future. We're here to help you get there. But at the end of the day, it's your life and you should do something that literally you wake up, you're excited, you're energized, and you want to do that thing that you're, you know, that energizes you, that makes a difference.
Yeah. And as for me, I would say the difference between what I'm doing with Rebel Advisors and I do within my role as a director of student success at the college I work at is that, you know, the difference is, and one, the things that I say, I don't risk being fired, and the other one, I risk being fired. Because for me, it's all about the students. I mean, that's why I got into higher education. And, you know, I've worked at a few different colleges, and pretty much every college I've been at, they've all said, oh, if you tell the student that, you know, what are you doing in college, or why don't you look at this college because it'd be a better fit for your career, all of them say, oh, if the president heard that, he'd probably fire you. And to me, that doesn't make a great, I don't know, I wouldn't want to go to an institution that operated that way. Personally, for me, and I think for these students, I believe that being honest with students, actually treating them as people and not just, you know, these numbers coming through where they're taking classes and maybe they develop a little bit of a relationship with a professor. I've never really heard a student say this was the best class ever occasionally, but usually they get their best experiences outside of classes. So for me, it's really developing a strong relationship with the students, getting to know them, and really having those candid conversations. And, you know, most places, they aren't doing this. They aren't treating students as people. So for me, I wouldn't say there's necessarily a difference. The difference for me is that, one, I risk being looked at a lot differently as a director of student success, challenging most people's thinking, the way they run their programs. But at the same time, it allows me to also create these innovative programs for the colleges that are not very traditional compared to other institutions, or a bit unconventional compared to other institutions. And working with Rebel Advisors, it allows me to really do this at a way that impacts the students or people that aren't students that want to explore alternative paths in the best way that's in line with them.
How can we change the way that people view college and the alternative being, you know, you're not going to succeed?
Yeah, Kristen, if you want to take this one, because I think that that also has a lot to do with the employer side.
Sure. So I am in the talent space, basically in corporate. And the beauty of James and I being partners is he's in education, I'm on the talent side. You know, I'm basically a talent manager, and I do a lot of organizational development. And a lot of that has to do with people, because people are the essence. They are the, you know, I almost want to say the blood of the organization. If you thought of an organization as a human body, what keeps that organization running? It's the flow, and the energy. So the beauty is that we're at these two ends. And so right in between, you know, someone, going through education and entering the workplace is this space, is this decision space where we collaborate a lot. What we've discovered through our research is that there are a number of institutions and organizations that actually are changing that mindset. It's a little slow, but we're hoping it becomes a snowball effect. Google's a great example, and there's a couple other organizations that have recently announced that, you know, college isn't all it's cracked up to be. And one of the things I can speak to as a talent professional is that when you look at organizations that are thriving, they are organizations that are very agile and they are comfortable with change. They're looking for people that have an entrepreneurial spirit and can really go with the flow and think on their feet. So many times, you know, one thing that is seen in terms of the university setting is that it's still school. And although there might be some opportunities to be entrepreneurial and creative, there's not as many as there should be. And that's why, you know, a lot of organizations have some issues with supporting universities, because they're saying, hey, look, you know, you're producing, great people who are smart and they know what might have been a good trend or methodology years ago, but I need someone who is creative and can help us solution solve and has the latest technology. And that's really up to the individual. And sometimes, to be honest with you, universities, you know, squeeze that out of people in a way. So I think it's starting to happen now, but we do have a number of organizations that want to partner with us, and some that partner with us already, in terms of creating that alternative path mindset, or, you know, ways to enhance creativity and to enhance entrepreneurial or the skill set of that. And in addition, there are a number of people that are supporting us. So I think it's on the move, and I'm really happy about it.
Cool. Yeah. And then, yeah, just to add to that, if anyone does align with what we're talking about and they're an organization or an institution, they can always message us at hello@rebeladvisors.org. But I would say, yeah, absolutely. It's mainly that employer end of really transforming the way they hire, focusing on a person's skill set and experience rather than that college degree, because so many people are going through college now that, you know, there's so many people competing for the same job, or students are just kind of checking it off their to-do list. So I think colleges really just have to get back to what they're meant to do, and that's really to educate rather than run people through, because I don't think education is happening in a way that people really align with, right? Most people go into the classes and they have someone speak to them that's a professor that lectures at them, then they have to go off, they have to read, they write a paper, and then the professor reads it so they can see that the student learned. And I think the best way to learn is really the Alan Watts method. And he's always saying education is preparing people for the future, for something that might possibly happen that probably won't, and hopefully they'll remember it for when they need it. And that's why I really like this way of create the results that you want in your life, and that's the best way to learn, is through the process. not for someone asking you to digest some information. And so I think to really transform this perception of college, they just need to change what they're doing.
If you had the ability to change the way educational systems work, what do you think the best way to do it for the future would be?
I would say less systemized. I think focusing on the results that a person literally creates in their life is a way to show that they're learning and them actually building the steps that they need. There's methods called agile learning, and I know there's agile learning centers for younger kids, and it's less about making sure that they memorize the content and more about getting them engaged in the process of learning and making sure that they're ready for that. So especially if you look at generations, millennials, right? We tend to like to be spoon-fed, and then other generations, they want to be more independent. And so I think the generation coming up will definitely be more independent, and they're going to be more self-directed. And so it's really going to be creating these ways that people can pursue what they want.
Yeah, ideally for me, you know, when I think of what it would look like is, to be honest with you, just giving the open space for people to thrive. I almost imagine, you know, a lot less rigidity. I'll give you an example. I visit universities time to time, and I notice that they are set up the same way. A lot of stale looking classrooms, white walls. I go in and it's almost like a depression comes over me in a way, because I wonder often, you know, where would James and I be if we didn't have the persistence and, you know, support that we have in order to thrive and be creative? What would we have done in our everyday lives if we didn't know that there were, you know, a community of other creatives out there who really are okay with being different and unique? And there were such things, for instance, like communities like the World Domination Summit, where we all met. So I often imagine that it's this open space, you know, and in the future, I hope it will be, where there's resources and tools and thinkers and speakers that actually inspire people versus give people directives and, you know, tighten the classroom setting with tools and rules that really only allow so much room to wiggle and be unique. I have a hope for the future, but I'm hoping that universities do listen to this as well, and professionals listen in to see that, you know, in order to be creative, you have to have creative environments. And when you don't have that, all you're doing is stifling what could be. And when you think of students, you know, they really are our future. I know that's cheesy and people say it, but it's true. And as I watch students, you know, get off the bus, even middle school kids, as they walk into their houses, I think, what is the environment that they're going into every day? And are they just getting, as James said, in a way, like spoon-fed information, and for the only purpose to regurgitate that, to get a grade? You know, when you think about the future, and even now, as we're all entrepreneurs, and I know some of us have full-time jobs in addition to that, there isn't a grade that you get at the end of the day. You know, you may get reviewed, but it's not cookie cutter. It's not, hey, do this and you'll get a pass or you'll get a fail. It's much more than that. And so I don't think we're doing our due diligence with prepping people. And again, I hope that Rebel Advisors can assist organizations and universities with looking at environments and looking at opportunities in a different light.
How can education change the environment to foster more creativity?
Piggybacking on what Kristen said, or I guess in relation to it, I would say, you know, having worked at colleges, like Kristen said, there's all these white walls and all this rigidity, and Now, every time people want to engage students, they say, oh, well, let's create this program. And then another person says, well, let's create this program. And everyone's creating these programs to get involved with the students and engage the students. And you have the academic advisor that has hundreds of students. And I think it's really just making sure that you treat them as people. And everyone wants to create these programs. They don't need another program. They need you to treat them like a human being and actually work with them to learn instead of spoon feeding or just kind of giving them a quiz and seeing if they know the information or filling in those little dots. So I think it's really them creating those results that they want in their life. And just to clarify, we aren't saying college is bad or that people shouldn't go to college, right? Because people that want to be doctors and architects, obviously I don't want an entrepreneurial doctor operating on me. It's good for them to learn that. But it's really for these creatives and really engaging people. And I think a lot of times colleges get stuck in tradition. And the millennials, and especially – you know, Generation Z, we don't really like tradition. We like to continue to move forward. And so I think it's letting go a lot of that tradition and getting rid of those white walls and actually letting the creativity out. If you look at higher education years ago, they definitely allowed people to be more creative, especially in the 60s and the 70s. But as it's become more of a business and funneling them to different organizations so they can have a job, I think they've lost their creativity and lost the purpose of education.
Yeah, to add to that, Kevin, too, one additional comment I can add is it's very valuable to get students involved or just individuals involved and ask questions about what they're looking for. You know, let them collaborate together and have input. I do this not only, you know, outside of work, but also with my full-time position. A lot of it is, hey, let's get feedback. Let's talk to the people who actually are going to be involved in a process or in a program. Why not just ask the question? A lot of times we forget, but there is a lot of danger in assumption. And, you know, we think that it's good for people, or we think that it's good for the student or the employee or what have you. But we really should just stop and take a moment and say, hey, do you know, let me get your feedback on this, or can we collaborate, or, you know, what do you think would work? And at the same token, after something's been implemented, ask them, you know, what did you think went well, and where do you think we could improve? Because that's the answer is right there. And I think sometimes we miss that. I think educators specifically think sometimes they have to have all of the answers, and that's not the case. Sometimes it's just fostering the learning and being a facilitator of minds. It's not always being the expert and, you know, standing up in front of that classroom as the know-it-all professor and giving information. So if we can change that mindset, that would be great. There's so many resources out there, as James mentioned, with the millennials and Gen Z. I mean, they're very resourceful. They are very much in tune with technology. Why not leverage that and have some fun with it?
It's very interesting that you guys mentioned the singular answer to, like, educational questions when there are multiple paths in normal life. You don't go through normal life saying, oh, I can only do this, right?
Yeah.
You have multiple options in everything you do, and a lot of times you will fail because, you know, we have no idea what the right answer is because there is no right answer. Mm-hmm. So I think the thing to do is to get people to open themselves up to whatever may come as opposed to finding the right, quote unquote, right way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really, people are always afraid to fail, afraid to make mistakes, but yet everyone knows that's what you learn from. You learn from failure. You learn from the mistakes that you make. But that's really how you get better. And by people not making these mistakes, that's where they end up in that point in their life where they're like, you know, I followed what everyone else wanted because it was the thing to do. I read a great book called Go for No the other week, and it talked about how most people are trying to get others to say yes or go for yes. And let's say someone has a quota of yeses that they need. Maybe it's students to get signed up for a program. And so they can say, oh, I know if I do this, I'll be able to get the 5 students that I need. But the book talked about actually doing the reverse to make yourself more resilient to failure, more resilient to rejection. And instead of saying that you need 5 yeses, what's your ratio? Is it that usually if you ask 10 people, maybe you get 50%? So instead of necessarily doing enough to get 5 people, try and get your 20 no's and really do it that way. So 10 no's to get your 5. And it makes you more resilient to rejection, to mistakes, and to failure, because those are what's actually going to support you and create the path for you that's more personalized rather than what's already been done.
Yeah, I think you are able to help yourself by failing, but not just failing. You figure out what didn't work, what can work.
Exactly.
And that's a new assumption. You don't know if it's going to work or not, but you will learn every step of the way.
Yep.
I'm actually reading Brené Brown's book, Daring Greatly, and one thing that she says in the book, you know, it's actually a question. She asks, what's worth doing even if you fail? And I read that actually this past week, but what an eye opener, because a lot of times we do get consumed with failure and we're afraid of that feeling. We're afraid, as you both mentioned, the rejection factor. But what's worth doing if it does, even if it doesn't turn out okay? And a lot of times you'll find that that's where your passion lies, that you are willing to take risk. You're willing to let go of fear if something's really in line with what you stand for and who you are as a human being. One thing we mention in our book is the whole cognitive dissonance factor, where, you know, what you do differs from what you say or what you believe. And in reality, you want everything to match up, because that's when you're most harmonious and that's when you will most likely succeed, because there's that energy flow. And, you know, it's just a great way to have a reflection moment when you can read these types of materials of great successful people that can really challenge the thinking and help us realize that sometimes we have to let go of the fear factor.
What are some other things that you talk about in the book that can help guide people towards some sort of direction as opposed to, you know, wandering aimlessly?
Yeah, one thing that we do have, and James can add to this as well, we have a section in the book that actually profiles the going to college route as well as what we call the detour. So what can you do in terms of actions you can take that will lead to success, or lead to at least, you know, self-identification of what success looks like for you? Because in reality, it's defined by each individual person differently. But I really enjoy that part of the book because it's a very applicable piece. You know, we come to the audience at a high level perspective, but we're also talking to rebels here. So one of the biggest things that I stress to people is, you know, the book has a lot of guidance, but at the same token, we're not trying to give you a clear roadmap, because we're actually against that. We want you to define your route, your detour, your way by yourself, because you have that mindset. If you're reading The Rebel Way, you're generally a rebel. You're someone that's thinking, I don't know if what everybody else is doing is for me, or I don't know if what society's prescribing is the exact way that I want to follow. So I like that part, but it's a great way to look and have a comparison of what I could do in college if I pursue it and what I could do if I don't go to college, yet still get some of the same tools, experience, and knowledge.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite sections too. I would say one of the ways that we wrote the book and the way that we've I guess, put our focus is that it's really about them making the decision because, you know, they have to be the ones to make a decision. So many times people get these self-help books or guidance books, and it's sort of like that spoon feeding. They're hoping that the answer appears between the pages. And really, like Kristen said before, the answer is inside them. It's just about guiding them so they can discover that. That's why the book is meant to be to be a tool that they can use to help them figure out, is college really right for them? What are ways that they can pursue what they'd like? And then using those resources that we have on the website to actually make that happen, whether that's a coach that they want, finding a particular offering that we have, and maybe it's simple things like they want to travel, so they need to use Airbnb and they didn't realize that it's an accessible resource for them. So it's really about getting them into action and really deciding what's right for them. So I would agree that, yeah, that really last part of, do you want to go the detour route or do you want to go the college route? And if you're going to do college, how can you do it differently? I think that's the most pivotal part of the book. But that lead up helps them make their decision.
Is there a way that you can tell whether or not you should go to college?
Well, so when you say that, do you mean like a simple A and B type thing?
Is there like a specific type of person that shouldn't go to college?
Typically, I wouldn't say necessarily shouldn't go to college. I think it's more about pursuing what you want and seeing what comes of that, because they may pursue a million different things and then say, you know what, maybe let me try the college route. But if you're going to go to college, you should know that it has a particular purpose, or else you're dropping tons of money for simply a degree, so then you can get into a job that, you know, you're not even sure if you really want it. So even if you're going to explore a job, you might as well hold off on the college and figure out ways that you can experience that job without going through 4 years of school. So I think it's really about them testing and seeing what comes of that. Kristen probably has some additional thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I have to say that one of the best things I did was I actually, you know, worked when I was in college. I tried different jobs. A multitude, to be honest with you. And in addition to that, even in between my career from undergraduate to graduate school, I also took time off and I researched. I think many times we see college in front of us as, okay, I finished high school, now it's time to go to college. Or maybe you weren't fortunate to go to college, but you wanted to. So, you know, maybe your employer has a tuition reimbursement program and then you decide to go and pursue college then. Regardless of what the situation is, a lot of times people see it as a promise, right? If I go to college, I'm going to get something. I'm going to get higher pay. I'm going to get that dream job. Someone's going to hand me keys to my mansion and my Ferrari. It's not always that way. And what we want people to know is it is a tool. It's a tool. So when you start doing that self-reflection, you want to consider your path. And if your path is to, for instance, you know, start your own business, you might not need a degree in entrepreneurship in order to start your own business, or, you know, a graduate at level MBA. You may just want to start your own business. I started my own business. The first one was a terrible flop. I was in high school. My dad said, what do you want to do? And I said, I'm going to sell jewelry. And I thought it was going to be the best thing. And, you know, I had jewelry. My dad was my financier. I was very young. But I flopped. I decided I didn't really want to go up to people and sell jewelry. So I learned that really early on that that wasn't necessarily something I wanted to do. But throughout my life, you know, I didn't go to school to do entrepreneurship, but I did start businesses. And one of my first startups was, it was that, you know, for, it ran for a very long time. It was about 4 years or so. I had a number of different partners. I had a financier, student warehouse com, which is James and I connected again for the second time during that stint. But, you know, sometimes you just have to try things. Now, if school backs that up, if it gives you that skill set or the exposure or the support, then I say do it. But if it doesn't make sense, you may just be, like James said, wasting money, wasting time, and wasting resources. I wanted to just mention one other thing. One thing, too, that we noticed, James and I, is there are people that pursue school. So, you know, in terms of a graduate or undergraduate degree, to basically avoid life, to avoid making that decision of whether they want to do something on their own or something creative or do something where it's more of, you know, a standard corporate job. Some people just are school addicts in a way. They go from undergraduate to graduate, and then they're like, hey, I'm going to get a PhD. And, you know, we'll ask the question, what's the method behind the madness? You know, does this really make sense, or is there something else going on? I don't know if you want to add to that, James.
Yeah, I was going to agree, because a lot of times people do look at college as this promise, but a lot of times they don't look at the results. So the book helps them look at those results. So just so you can get a sense of the information, because sometimes people hear us saying, "Oh, maybe college isn't right," but they don't really know the details. And you know, most people go to college not knowing what they want to do. 80% of people change their major at least once, on average 3 times. And the majority of these people, only 27%, are actually getting a job in their field. And then on top of that, they're graduating with, on average, $35,000 of debt. Most people that I know, actually everyone that I talk to, it's always more. And so it's definitely not that promise. And as well, look at the degree. Is it really necessary? You know, sometimes people tell me, "Oh, well, I'm going to go for you know, this IT or this tech degree." And I always think of these founders of startups and these technology companies, especially back in the day, like Apple and Microsoft. They didn't have college programs for these degrees, college programs for those fields. They were just starting. And so it's really looking at what's really necessary. Can you do it on your own? So I completely agree. It's definitely not that promise that people think it is.
What do you guys do on a day-to-day basis for Rebel Advisors, and what do you see the future of Rebel Advisors? As the future of Rebel Advisors?
Sure. I would say that on a day-to-day, it's really us building community. Because without everyone coming together saying that, you know, there needs to be more options besides just college, because college isn't built for everyone, not much is going to happen if people don't come together. So it's really us building this community and connecting with people that believe what we believe, and getting everyone to band together, whether that's something simple like people holding the I'm a Rebel sign for the community page on our site, or someone connecting us for a podcast, or writing for their blog, or simply connecting so we can help advise them. It's really just building our community and seeing how we can best serve people, because that's the key to any business, any institution, organization, is it's about the people and making sure that you're helping them. So that's really what I would say we do on a day-to-day basis. Obviously, there's the typical business things that you have to deal with, but most of it's building a community.
What's interesting too is, you know, James and I work full time.
Yeah.
So we are constantly juggling, and it's funny because, you know, we're text messaging throughout the day, and I'll touch base with a certain company that, you know, recently a company that does, promotes a year of service, and he'll talk to another company that promotes, you know, networking, and we go back and forth, and we come up with these great ideas and ways to approach the business now, like our new our coaches that we're launching in March, our whole lineup. That's fantastic. But in addition to that, you know, we hope to have a launch party. So we're planning that. And there's a lot of other factors that go into it. We also plan for the future in terms of what we see as the vision of Rebel Advisors. And I have to agree, you know, with James, a lot of it is built around community. It's not all about, to be honest with you, money or fame per se. It's about getting the idea out there that college isn't the only answer, and it's not the dictator of success. You are, as an individual, the dictator of success. It's up to you to define it. And so as we move forward into the future, we just really want to build that. And we're hoping to just, you know, start this massive movement. I mean, we've had great response so far. I've had, you know, not only people who are in education, but also who are in business, you know, entrepreneurs who run their own business, or people who are just taking that alternative path, even in later in career, who decide, I'm quitting my corporate job and I'm doing this instead. And you're right, you know, they'll say to us, you're right. And we're like, we are. No, but the beauty is that, you know, we just want to shed that light that there is another way. There's not only one way, and we want to be the people that pioneer that there's just so much out there that is there for possibility. And we don't want people to be put in a box. So that's what we're pushing. We'll see how that develops, but we're excited.
I like the idea of success being self-defined, because without that, like, what are you working towards?
You'd be surprised how many people I run into day to day that are so unfulfilled. It is the saddest thing for me to come into a conversation with someone who literally is still seeking, still searching. And I'll say to someone, you know, even over a lunch meeting, hey, so what's your passion? What are your hobbies? What really gets your blood pumping, or what turns the light on? And they can't answer the question, Kevin. They can't answer the question. And, you know, some people are in their 20s and some people are, you know, in their 30s or 40s, and they're still looking for that external factor. They're not realizing that it's inside. And so we're trying to get ahead of that ball. We're trying to get ahead of the game with helping people define that early on, because in reality, you know, one of the things we speak about in our book too is not becoming a drone, and specifically, you know, not becoming a corporate drone, someone who goes into work and honestly, they've run out of steam, the lights are out, and they're really just on autopilot. You know, you can work in corporate and be super creative and have an outlet as well. But, you know, we want to make sure that people are living fulfilled lives. And I think that's where we really are fueled to pursue this as well. Even though we're working hours on end, we really want to have an impact on other people.
How do you guys build that community that you're trying to create?
Sure. I would say it's really just conversations. I always say sort of crucial conversations, right? Say it's addressing the elephant in the room, really seeing how people feel and helping them identify ways that they can get involved. Like I mentioned, sometimes people just want to know that they support us, and right, maybe that's a like on a page, and that's what they're willing to do. And then others, perhaps it's building a partnership, having us on their podcast. And it's all these different ways that everyone we speak with is able to identify ways that they can help us. And a lot of times, you know, people aren't asking for anything in return. And that's when you know it's really sincere, right? Is that someone says, oh, the world really needs this, and we'd like to help you with this, or here's how we can help support you, or I'd like to introduce you to this person. And it's sort of like a snowball effect. It just keeps coming together, right? One person will introduce us to two people, and then each of those people introduce us to another two. And before we know it, we've begun to build this community of people that are really rooting for us, and we're supporting one another. So that's it on more of the business end. As far as the student end, it's, again, having those crucial conversations of where are you at, and how can we help you? And from there, it's building that trust. And that's what I think everything is about, is really having that trust and looking out for one another. So that's how we've really begun to build community.
Cool. I have a couple more questions left that I pre-prepare for everybody. Can you guys each talk about one of your favorite quotes?
Do you have one, Kristen?
You know, I am addicted to quotes. I love quotes. And I have to just reiterate the one from this past week, Brené Brown, "What's worth doing even if you fail?" I know I had mentioned that prior, but it's something that I've just been reflecting on. And I think that it's something that resonates with the Rebel Way. When you go to identify what success is to you, what's worth doing even if you fail?
Oh, I like that one. And then it's for me. Yeah, I'm a quote addict as well. I have quite a few on my fridge because that's where I put my vision board. I never thought the day I would have a vision board, but I do, and I put it on the fridge because I like to eat. So I would say my favorite quote, and probably the one that really changed my life, was "Everything that you know is life was created by people no smarter than you or I, and you can change it." And so that one was by Steve Jobs. I'm sure I might have butchered it a little, but that was the general concept of, right, just because someone says something is right or someone says something is wrong, that's their perspective. It's really you getting to create your life and choosing what's right or wrong. And a lot of times we have these traditions and rules and things simply because someone was put in power or they were given authority during that time that someone said, you know what, this is the way to do things. But as people grow up, new people take over, there's the people that just follow it because it was to be followed. And then there's others like us who question it. So I think that's what we're doing, is we're saying we're creating life. We're creating this social movement of creating more answers for people.
Awesome. Do you have a morning routine, each of you? And if you do, talk a little bit about it.
I'll jump in. My morning routine is less of a routine and more of a frenzy. If you were a fly on the wall, I swear, you might lose your breath. I have two challenges in the morning. One is that I love my sleep. So those of you who know me out there, I love to sleep in. Sleep energizes me. And two, I'm full of thoughts in the morning. So for some reason, my best ideas come to me when I'm in the shower. I don't know what that's about. But, you know, that's basically part of my morning routine, is getting as much sleep as I can and really having that brainstorm throughout my morning activities. And then I basically hope I get to work on time. That's about it.
And, as for me, I don't know if it's necessarily a routine, but I always feel like my mornings are crazy. I really do beat to my own drum. So usually it's me hitting the snooze button because I'm a night owl and the typical work day wasn't built for me. So I'm always hitting the snooze button, and then I'm waking up, throwing on some music, and you know, occasionally I'll go and work out, but usually I have a million thoughts in the morning, so it's really just writing them all down, making sure I'm cohesive in my thoughts and seeing what they actually mean, collecting them, right? As you've asked me a ton of questions on this, I wonder after everyone, like, hey, did that make sense? Because they're always going a million miles an hour, then, you know, I listen to a podcast or something that really gets me looking towards the future and creating.
And one thing James loves to do that he's not mentioning is he loves to play music in the morning. So we go on work trips and we go visit other places and join other communities with bunches of creatives. He loves to play music. So you got to talk about that, James.
Oh, yeah. I'm always playing music, probably dancing around. usually on my own, getting breakfast ready and all those types of things. But yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Do you have any books, tools, resources, podcasts, or documentaries that you would recommend for people?
there are two podcasts I recommend. They're both friends of mine. One is the Passion for Work podcast with Steve and Paul. The reason I love that podcast is it's all about people who love their jobs. And his whole ideology is, you know, work doesn't have to suck. And so I think if you're a person out there and you're exploring different paths and you're thinking, oh, I don't know what my future is, you know, what the future holds for me or what I want to do in the future, it's great to listen to other people about what they love about their jobs and about what they do and how they got there. So I recommend that one. The other one is a friend of mine, Benjamin Tyler. He runs an Evolving Lifestyle podcast. And that one, it's interesting because there's a lot of world domination people on there as well. But he breaks down lifestyle choices for really successful people. And I enjoy that one because, you know, again, he has a wider range of people that come onto his show, a lot of different backgrounds and lifestyle choices that are made. But in the end, I think everyone can learn something from the people that speak. And so I recommend that one as well.
Yeah, as for me, I would say probably my favorite podcast that I really just got onto, it's called Startup with Alex Bloomberg. And it brings you through really him starting his startup. And he records the conversations that he has, his challenges, his talks with his wife, talks with a business partner. And you get to hear him pitching investors. And the best part is, you go through his failures and challenges as well, right? Sometimes as people are starting things and they don't do it perfectly, you kind of feel like you're the crazy one or you're failing. And sometimes I have those thoughts of, oh my gosh, this is what I just did, or I can't believe that. And, you know, this is really, I think it's really good, especially for someone starting out or even a seasoned professional in business, because you realize that you're not so crazy, that this stuff happens, and it's how you learn. And so that's probably one of my favorites right now.
Cool. Who is somebody that you personally know that is extremely creative, and then somebody you don't know personally that's also extremely creative?
No one wants to answer.
Do you want me to jump in? Okay. Someone I know personally, and I mentioned this before, I guess I would refer back to my dad, Joe Cruz. You know, growing up with an entrepreneurial father, it was very helpful to realize that being unique is okay. And I think that there are a lot of creative people out there that are listening to your podcast today that might think that they don't have someone that's close to them that they can relate to. And although my father and I were different, we do have the same common trend that we're very creative and we like to challenge and think for fun. I mean, we have these really in-depth conversations. We're both talkers. So, you know, he really taught me that it was okay to stand out from the crowd and it's okay to be different and to realize that being different really means in many cases that you're meant to do more with your life. And that you should take risks and you should do what, aligns with your gifts so that you can bring value to the world. So I would just mention him that I know. Someone I don't know that's very successful, Marie Forleo is an all-time favorite of mine. James introduced me to her many, many years ago. But I'm a big fan of hers because she helps people create a business and a life you love, to steal her tagline. I think she's a great person to look up to as a woman entrepreneur. And I like the fact that she's very creative and multi-talented and has a very interesting path to where she got to where she is today. And so she's someone I definitely follow. And I, you know, one day I'd love to meet her if she's out there. But I definitely recommend her site and her advice to other people.
Yeah, so as for me, I actually found this question, I actually find it to be the most challenging. Because there's all different types of creativity, right? Sometimes there are the people that are creative in a tangible sense. They can create a design, they can paint, they're artists, or they or they're able to create something. Whereas others, they might have these thoughts that are creative, or they come out organically that you're like, oh my gosh, how could someone even come up with that? And so I'd say that there are different types of creativity, and I think creativity is really exercised in a sense, right? The more you work out, the more in shape that you get. The more you exercise your creativity, the more creative you become, whether you're practicing a craft or whether you're just really challenging traditional thinking. So I would say someone that in a way falls into both categories for me is my boss, Jess Baronico. And he's an academic dean for a school of management, but he is probably one of the most unconventional thinkers that I have ever met when it comes to education. And he's really great at transforming institutions. And so I say he falls into both categories because he has these thoughts and comes up with these ideas that most people don't. And he's able to execute on these. But one of the things that he's taught me, or he even says, he's like, I'm not that creative. He's like, for every one of my one good ideas, my wife has probably 9 or 10 others. And so he's very good at mobilizing and executing on these. So I think someone can be creative in a sense, but also tap into those that are really artists and creators that have these organic thoughts and actually make something come of those. So in a sense, he's creative, but he's not. But so it's sort of like this mix. So I'd say that's my best answer to that one.
Awesome. James, you just touched on this a little bit, but what are your definitions of creativity, and what can people do to be more creative?
Yeah, so to be more creative, I would say just exercise those areas that you think need exercising. For instance, I'm going to be taking some improv classes because I tend to be an introvert that I sometimes can be very planned, or I want to know what's happening, and I can be very calculated. And I'm like, you know, how about I exercise being more off the cuff, rolling with the flow, dealing with the punches, and really saying what's on my mind. And I'm going to be doing some improv classes. So I think it's exercising those areas that people are able to challenge themselves. I truly believe in the saying that it's better to develop your strengths and manage your weaknesses. A lot of times people try to develop their weaknesses and they let go of their strengths. But creativity, I think it's really just challenging the way that you do things. And if you want to learn how to paint, take a painting class. If you want to learn how to design, take a design class. And it's really having these different experiences that you wouldn't traditionally have that allows you to think differently, try new things, whether that's going out to a different restaurant, trying a different type of food, or like I said, trying a different type of class that you wouldn't traditionally try. Maybe it's meeting people that you wouldn't traditionally meet. It's really stepping off that path that you would usually follow. So I think creativity for me is something that can be exercised, that is something that you're just not used to.
Yeah, for me, you know, to add to that, it's really bringing something new to the table that's of value. And so personally, when I look at my life, whether it's with Rebel Advisors or my full-time job or my other startup, I look at things that have to do with, you know, building something that doesn't exist, or fixing something that is broken, or even pioneering change. And so a lot of times the way I define creativity has to do with not necessarily thought, which I know can be very creative, but a lot of it has to do with action and, mm-hmm. you know, having the willingness to push boundaries and to have that approach, not to be fearless per se, but to push through that fear and to see what comes out on the other side. In addition to that, I think one big factor of creativity for me as well is having an impact on something greater than yourself. And that's personal to me. It doesn't necessarily have to per se, but that's where I value creativity the most, when it has a larger impact.
Awesome. Well, it's been awesome talking to you guys. It's really educational, and I think your cause is really cool. Would you like to challenge the audience to do something?
Oh, this is pretty good. What were you going to say, Kristen?
I was going to say I have one.
Oh, go for it.
One of my, I would challenge the audience to listen to their inner voices. You don't always have to seek information outside of yourself to make you creative. I think a lot of times, as you mentioned throughout the podcast, people are looking for answers that are present. They're looking for something, you know, as James mentioned before, they're looking for the answer between the lines and the pages of the book and so forth. So try to look inward. There's that old saying, you know, the answer was always within. The answer lies within. And I just want to encourage people to do that. The other thing I would encourage listeners to do is that if you do need a spark externally, which is okay, if you're not finding the answer, what you need to find by looking internally, definitely join a community and surround yourselves with other creatives and idealists. Idealists push the world forward. Idealists, they're the ones that create new things that, again, don't exist, or they saw what couldn't be seen, and you know, they didn't listen to the realist who said that would never work, or that we tried that before and that doesn't, you know, that didn't yield good benefits or outcomes. You know, surround yourselves with like-minded people and you'll see just a different feel and you'll have more success.
I think that's perfect.
Awesome. All right, cool. Where can people find you guys online?
Sure, they can find us at rebeladvisors.org, and as well, yeah, just at rebel_advisors for social media. But yeah, they should definitely check out rebeladvisors.org. There's plenty of resources for them. They can connect with us, and we're always happy to help.
Well, awesome. Yeah, thanks again for coming on. It's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
Same to you. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.
And that's it for the 38th episode of Cracking Creativity. For show notes, go to crackingcreativity.org/38. If you like this episode, subscribe to the show on iTunes at crackingcreativity.org/subscribe. Also, feel free to write a review or leave me a comment about the show. Hope this stoked creative fires, and I'll see you next time on Cracking Creativity.